Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show. Spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good looking for television. And now, here they are, to pluck the low-hanging fruit of the literati, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
All right. Speaking of the low-hanging fruit of the literati, we are reaching new lows today.
We are congratulating Mike Edison on the publication of his second book. No.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Dirty, dirty, clap, clap, dirty. Clap.
Dirty, dirty, dirty. And also, Judy, today is our 20th show.
That's beautiful.
It's amazing. They said it wouldn't last.
If it were a child, it would, I don't know.
Still it would have, two heads and frisbees for arms. Yeah, this is part of the Dirty, Dirty, Dirty tour. I'm like so excited. And our guests today are two former Screw editors, my colleagues and friends, Ivan Lerner, and the world's last great pornographer, Chip Maloney.
I love the Chip chapter.
Wow. I did too.
Chip, are you really doing pornography with your pants off these days?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I sit on a hoppity ball. I actually do have that for a seat.
That's good.
I saw that in a movie.
Because you need it for your hemorrhoids.
Yeah, you do actually. You know?
Yeah. Right. That's a donut pillow.
Yeah, no, he needs Beyond the donut pillow.
We're right into it today.
You're starting a new line of magazines about your hemorrhoids, right?
You know, I'm
the
looking
final
out
frontier.
In this restaurant, I see only one chick I would bang in the whole place.
Oh, come on. Come on,
you know what?
Marginal.
Yeah. Oh, you can't see this table over here because there's a whole multi-culti crew over here.
It's the whole Fashion Institute of Technology
seriously, sophomore class.
When's the last time you got laid as a pornographer? Probably like never.
I think Wang Chung was still on the charts.
Everybody, pull your Wang Chung tonight.
Yeah, pretty much. That's why I do what I do. Get the free passwords for the porn site.
So is there life after Screw? That's what we're here to discuss today. Is there life after pornography? Of course, you're still neck deep in the shit.
Yeah,
you are the last one standing, sitting on your hoppity ball.
Yeah, it's not as good as it used to be. It's not as fun, but you know it serves its purpose. It's distilled down into just like, you know, where you used to have like a couple of 3-4 people working on a magazine. Now it's like one guy doing like 5 titles, and I'm doing it at home.
Are you doing the incest rag still?
Doing the incest rags. Yeah, I actually got 2 of those dudes this week.
Incest
special
rag.
Daddy love. Yeah, special daddy love.
Meta tag incest. I love the titles though. The cover lines are the best.
They are.
No daddy, it wasn't a dream.
Those are my favorite things to think up the other day. The other day I was doing over 50. And I came up with a new
50. Ladies and gentlemen, over 50 is the name of a magazine for a specific niche market.
Also, by the way, you also do over 40.
Over 40, over 50.
What about over 60 or 70?
You know, I put as old as I can get in over 50 because there is no over. We did have a 69-year-old woman. I put on the cover line. I thought this was a good one. This was like Monday or Tuesday. I came up with nymphomania or dementia. Your call. And that was on the banner. You know, so.
Speaking of dementia, we're going to talk about my old friend and your guys' former employer. I was never actually an employee of Screw All. I'm not under Al. I mean, I was the editor, you know, in the post-Al regime, but I had written for them, you know, for years, and Al and I were friends. But you guys actually kept the lights on with paychecks signed
by
the man
himself. There's smoke coming out of Ivan's ears.
Well, you know,
here's the thing. Let's just set this up for everybody in Radio Land. Ivan hates Al Goldstein. Chip, on the other hand, adores him.
I learned a lot from Al. I mean, you know, for me, being from Oklahoma, I'm not a sophisto from New York like all you guys are.
You know, so goddamn Dust Bowl Okie. I goddamn it.
You're derivative. Everything you say is somebody else's.
Oh, here we are, dueling Goldsteins.
Chip, next time you look for your penis, make sure to buy the Van de Graaff Observatory to try to find it, because it is that tiny. And get some really micro tweezers, because I got to tell you that you are probably the most horrific little
your ass
tiny,
in the gold scene
tiny pretty little fat. Creep around.
You're so fat. Last time I tried to swerve to avoid hitting you in the street, my car ran out of gas.
What do you think about that, you goddamn four-eyed little peckerwood shit-heel? I god almighty, you do not have one television, and I have 412 televisions that I've never even turned on.
100... I remember the account told me I had 9 cell phone accounts that I was paying on. I only have one phone.
All right, we got to put this into some context. The truth is, my book, which we are putatively talking
dirty,
about.
Ladies
dirty.
And gentlemen, his book is so darn good. You all have to go out and buy it. Buy 3 or 4 copies eat them with your donuts in the morning. Mm. But it's a great read.
Thank you, Ivan.
Yep, okay. Great book. I'm buying four and handing them out for Christmas gifts.
Get off my dick for a second. Right. So we can just put this into some context here. This is awesome. This show makes me miss Midnight Blue.
I got to be on it a couple of times. I really enjoyed
it. I love it. It was one of the proudest moments of my entire career. This is when I was the publisher of High Times. I was in Midnight Blue.
Right.
And we need to put this into some context, because one thing, the book is about like the history of men's magazines. It's 60 years on the newsstand, basically from Eisenhower to Clinton, which is Hefner, Bob Guccione, Larry Flint and Hustler, of course, and Al Goldstein. But Al is like the least known, at least nationally. Everybody in New York knows him because he turned on the cable TV and there he was, like, you know, ripping a new asshole from some guy who sold some guy who sold him a lemon TV.
There's a guy who has a hot dog stand at the corner of 23rd Street and 8th Avenue, and I swear to God, those hot dogs are like goddamn rat penises wrapped up in goddamn Korean chewy toys.
We're definitely having these guys back.
God, I hate them. Fuck you!
But David Letterman, he never keeps his word. He's a bad Jew. He gives the rest of us a bad name. We had a weight-losing contest, and I won, and he wouldn't give me $5,000. David's cookies. Don't buy them. They're poison. They're full of poison.
For people who don't know Al Goldstein and Screw Magazine, the truth is, now listen, guys. I mean, honestly, Al is a hero, right? He's a First Amendment warrior to you. I mean, I know Ivan hates him.
I watched him go down
in flames.
I
hate him.
I keep on saying it because you keep saying it. I saw Al Goldstein in the hospital last week. The guy's withered away to nothing. It's like it's like a bad scene over there.
But if you hate somebody, they don't get like,
yeah, look at him laughing over here.
You're kidding?
Like,
he bought new dancing shoes for the funeral.
It looks like a David Cronenberg movie over there at the VA with Al, you know, with his guts all out and everything.
And on Tuesday, we'll kick
him. What orange pop and cake? The
sorry,
we used to do that. The dead ringer thing.
Yeah.
On Monday, we kick. Lauded on Sunday, and Monday, we kick.
I loved all the years I was writing for Screw.
I learned a lot from him. It's just like make a circus out of everything. When I'd see him get sued, and I go to court with him and this and that. And I'd see him just make a joke out of the whole thing. And he walks in with like prison stripes and a plastic ball and chain and... The guards are laughing. Everybody's laughing. Nobody's taking anything seriously. The judge comes out. You make a buffoon out of him. You got all the news agencies.
Except
there.
I'll tell you what. The last trial, which unfortunately was not a First Amendment trial.
It was
it was harassment of his secretary and his ex-wife. And that's where the ball really rolled off the cliff with Al. But yeah, he was there with his prison stripes and thing. But you know who was there?
Grandpa Munster, Gilbert Gottfried, character witnesses. You want those two jackasses
had so many people who were going to stand up for him, like really qualified people. He had guys from the ACLU, the NYACLU, and he chose Grandpa Munster.
Grandpa Munster.
Seriously.
Gilbert Gottfried.
I talked to his lawyer. Yeah, and Gilbert Gottfried. This is who Al wants. And Lewis, Grandpa Al Lewis.
How about that?
He's on the stand. And like, how old are you? And he's like, it's none of your fucking business.
Yeah. And then Al says, he was 5 when the Titanic went down. He's so fucking old. And then he's like, I was on a show called Car 54, where are you? And then the judge is like, stick to the story.
But you know what? That trial was such a circus. But you know who was there?
He orchestrated the circus and made it ridiculous.
Well, which he was expert at, of course. Yes. But who was there, which was for me like a big moment, was Jimmy Breslin.
Who's
one of my heroes. Sure. And a guy I learned a lot about writing from just reading his column. And Jimmy Breslin's probably the greatest reporter in the history of New York City. I mean, this guy could find a story just falling out of bed.
For him to show up was
And for him to be there, not only did he show up, and for it was a thrill for me. He called in the story, right, from a phone booth. It was like the front page, you know. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Right? I was talking to him, and he was very nice to me. And he goes, wait a second, kid. I gotta call this in. And he puts a quarter in the payphone.
No, it was like Dateline, the courthouse.
That's exactly. He goes, and he just says, copy. Give me copy.
And
that's what it was like. Dateline, Brooklyn, courtroom, Al Goldstein. It was awesome. It was like watching Jimmy Page lay down a guitar solo. You know? That's how hot it was for me. But here's what Breslin said, though. He said, there are three people, but who we really owe for freedom of speech. And it's Larry Flint, Lenny Bruce, Ralph Ginzburg, and Al Goldstein, the four people we really owe a debt to. And he says, you may not want to hang out with them, but you fucking owe them. And he was dressing down every reporter there who thought that Al was a joke. And he said, no, you have a job because of him. That's Jimmy
true.
Breslin.
That's absolutely. I think that's true. You know, even Larry said at Al's 30th anniversary party when he came to do the speech there, he gave him a little bit of a. He said,
I gotta tell you, Al Goldstein is the greatest human being that ever slithered out of a woman's filth.
I gotta tell you, Larry was nice enough to give me some time and invited me up to his office to talk to him. Talked to him about my book, and the first thing he says, yeah, I can die.
Like Edward G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson with a stroke.
Whenever I
the whole secret
Larry,
of Hustler I was am. That he stole everything from Screw.
Yeah, he was, and he said that too at the thing. He said, I owe everything to Larry, to Al, and I was surprised.
He says that he told me, the secret is to plagiarize, and I took it from Goldstein. Al's a very misunderstood guy. No, Larry loves him. Of course, Al now hates Larry because Al is broke and called Larry for a job, and Larry
why haven't you given me any money, you roller skating, rolling around gold wheelchair fucking prick? You have $17,000 that you shit out your ass every hour on the hour, and you need to give me some money because, god damn it, I am in the VA hospital in Queens rotting away!
Now, both of you guys were ghostwriters for Al, right? Both of you guys wrote the Fuck You page and stuff that got turned into like Rants, Raves,
Midnight. The Fuck You page? Tell me more about the Fuck You
page.
Well,
if I can jump in. And interrupt you.
Jump, Ivan, jump.
The thing that always drove me nuts was, like, for some reason I took it quasi-seriously, and so I, like, Al's mental gymnastics, he'd be like, Ivan, God almighty, I saw Giuliani on TV in drag, so I need you to have an editorial about him in drag with, make sure to have Harvey Kurtzman's Superman parody from Mad number 23 in 1952 involved, and by the way, the USS Pueblo incident in Korea, you have to have that included because I won the Congressional Medal of Honor in Korea, don't you forget that, for taking photographs of Jackie Onassis.
This
pussy.
Is good. Not only did Al take pictures of Jackie Onassis, this is good. People
but
are
not
saying,
in Korea.
No, not in Korea. Well, in Pakistan. But he was a legit journalist. He was of these guys, Hefner, Guccione, Flint, and Goldstein. He was a legitimate journalist, Al. You know, he was a photographer. He went with a press corps to Pakistan to take pictures of Jackie O, and then later put pictures of her.
Of her gooch.
Thank you. Which, you know, I mean, Hustler, you know, Hustler's famous for that, but people forget that those pictures were another example of plagiarism. It was in Screw first. Ran the pictures first, and then Larry bought them. Hefner and Guccione wouldn't touch them.
Flint is a great businessman.
We
cannot discount this in any way, shape, or form. Larry Flint is probably one of the best gosh darn publishing businessmen around. And what's wonderful about Flint is that he will... Like, he had a skateboard magazine, and he had horror magazines, and he had weird alternative film culture magazines, and he lets them go, and it's like, okay, I
trust you enough to do this,
but if you don't sell, if the number, like, as you can go to, you can send it to hell in a handcart as long as you're selling. The minute you don't sell, the minute you're like,
you're below 17,000 prints.
Well, that's the Myron
you're
Fast
shit out of a goose.
Theory of magazine publishing.
Sure.
Myron Fast, who Al actually worked for, like Hefner worked for Esquire.
But Al worked for Myron Fast,
who was the biggest sleaze bag in the history of magazine publishing.
Did Fast do like, I mean, because like,
that was just like, 20,000 was the magic number. 20,000 was, what?
Yeah.
What?
Did Fast do like because Splint would do like show. Skateboard magazines? Did like Fast? Because all I know about Fast is like girly stuff. Did he?
No, he did. He did all these knockoff magazines. Like when Star Wars came out, he did a movie called like Star Clones. He did Fifth Encounters of the First Kind magazine. Right. When Jaws was big, he did Shark Attack.
I said shut up.
Sharks Alive. What is this? The fucking apology? That was our Oprah moment, everybody.
I'm really sorry, Mike, and my tears are real.
No, Fast was the best because he didn't do skin magazines. Right. My favorite was Flick because if you looked at the logo type, it looked like fuck unless you got close up.
Yeah, I know. You're right about that, and I really wish I had seen that when I was a kid.
But he was, he did all these JFK assassination magazines, Beatles one-shots, Elvis one-shots.
Those are before.
You know, he did punk rock. When John Holmes was doing punk magazine, Fast knocked it off and made it punk rock. At the same time, he was doing acid rock by the same crew of people. And the amazing thing is they all looked authentic. I mean, it was like the acid rock magazine looked like it was like made by acid casualties, and the punk rock magazine looked like it was made by retarded people, as it should have been. And it was all the same people.
Just like were punk magazine.
Just chunking the shit out. But 20,000 was the magic number. So 20,000, it stays in the stands. 20,000, less than that, move on.
Exactly.
Yep.
And, yeah.
240s, man.
I think the reason Al was never as famous as Larry was because he was local. He just was tri-state area. I think he had a little half-ass. Yeah, and he had a little half-ass deal with Fawcett, I think, to distribute nationally, and then he fucked that
there
up.
There was like, national screw,
pissing
but
on Paley's
the country's
daughter
not. The country wasn't ready for a Jew like Al Goldstein.
No, but William Paley's owned, I guess, Fawcett, and then he pissed all over his daughter on some editorial on Midnight Blue.
Well, this is what Al specializes in, is like really biting the hand.
Yeah, he doesn't know, I guess.
I haven't met the bridge I haven't liked to burn.
I like that. You do your homework. Do your homework. I used to say that all the time.
God damn it, don't they teach you anything in that goddamn Oklahoma horror show that you call a home?
Well, Al always said that Screw was successful.
Your father's dead. I'd like to have sex with your mother. Can I have sex with your mother?
Al always said that Screw was successful, not because of him, but in spite of him.
That's true.
And he was the first guy to say that when he was losing it all. I mean, it was weird. He was like so just giving it up. I mean, he just rolled over.
He had it cornered when he was the only one in the world doing hooker ads, and then the New Yorker and all these other magazines.
You got a fucking hooker ad in the Yellow Pages now.
Now, yeah.
You know, I mean, being beaten by the internet is one thing, but the fucking phone book?
Right.
That's gotta hurt.
I had does getting hurt, beaten by a phone book. It does hurt.
Yellow Pages in more ways than one. Oh.
How's it going over there, Judy?
I'm just observing. It's your show, Mike.
Hi, Judy. How are you?
No, we're not talking about getting like fitted for bras like last week.
Oh, sorry. But we should take a break.
So
Trisha and I can recover.
Here in the studio with us also is Trisha McLaughlin, who's the genius who did the 3D book trailer for Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
The best book trailer I've ever seen
was cool.
By
I saw
far.
That. Yeah.
And
awesome.
You can get free glasses to see in 3D. It's
good
at MikeEdison.com. But Jack, why don't we roll the trailer? Let's hear the audio. It's pretty suave.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
The new book by Mike Edison.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
Of playboys, pigs, and penthouse paupers. An American tale of sex and wonder.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
The hilarious and shocking, never-before-told story of four men who defined sex on the newsstand. Who broke down the final frontiers of free speech and unbridled lust.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
Discover the filth and fury of Al Goldstein and Screw Magazine.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
Gasp in horror at the attempted assassination of Larry Flint, payback for a life in porn, and witness his remarkable comeback to become the sex king of Beverly Hills.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
Marvel at the untold story of penthouse publisher Bob Guccione, one of the richest men in the world, who lost it all.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
And revealed, for the first time, the dark secrets of Hugh Hefner and his secret double life.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
Ripping the sheets off an American tradition. No punches have been pulled. No holds barred in this high-speed tale of sex in the centerfold.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
With special guests, Lenny Bruce, John Lennon, Dorothy Stratton, Ronald Reagan and the Moral Majority, and the staff of Mad Magazine.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty,
Dirty, Dirty, of playboys, pigs, and penthouse paupers, an American tale of sex and wonder.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
Coming soon, wherever books are sold.
My name is Mike Edison. This
That was our Dirty, Dirty, Dirty commercial. We're here on a special 20th anniversary edition.
I got stretch marks on my titty older than 20 years.
And we should say, once again, we're on the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting from Bushwick, Brooklyn, behind Roberta's Restaurant. Mike Edison here with Judy McGuire, and our guests today, Chip Maloney and Ivan Lerner. And Trisha McLaughlin here in the studio with us as well.
Yay. But we couldn't afford a mic for her. But she will get some discount pork chops if she plays her cards right. Mike, I'm loving your book. I'm not all the way through. I skipped ahead and read the Chip chapter, of course.
That's the only one you need to read.
The Chip really does have the final word in the book. You really do have the last word.
I do. I like the way you handled it, too.
I like the way you handled me all those years.
One thing I wanted to talk to you people about is there's a line in here.
You people?
You people.
You people.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
Low life. Low life. That's what it means. Low life.
What the hell?
Like you said, I won't hang out with you, but I'll take your money.
Like the same way.
You can pay for lunch.
You're griping about the same way Chip would gripe about handling Mike's nuts.
I have written porn. I wrote for Mike's magazine, Climax, with the triple-coated clean centerfold,
Climax.
So I'm not putting myself on.
That's right.
This.
They fucking lacquered that. I remember that.
you could use it over and over again.
I was there at Ground Zero for many of porn's greatest inventions. I mean, don't forget, Ruderman, the guy we used to work for, was a complete scumbag, but don't forget he invented, or at least stole the idea, for phone sex.
He owned a lot of those lines.
Phone sex. Yes. Carl Ruderman. Douchebag, secret pornographer, who Larry Flint later made asshole of the month and hustler, and actually put a bounty on him. He offered $500 to find a picture of this dirtbag because Ruderman's whole thing was, you know, he had this Tony place in Connecticut. You know, his biggest problem was landing his helicopter in his backyard. His neighbors didn't go for that.
Well, his neighbors were Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas because my uncle lives right behind them, and they were actually complaining more than anybody else.
Right, so, but he was a secret pornographer, which Larry never really accepted because that's the whole thing.
That's bullshit, man. Like, you know, he's making a pile of bread off of spread beavers and titties and shit. And he's
I'm actually a businessman.
I mean, it'd be one thing if he was a mafia guy and who was like, no, I just run a dry cleaning business. I do not know anything about this toxic waste of dead bodies.
I'm a plumber.
Right, I'm a plumber. But, you know, it's just horse shit, you know? It's just like, it's cowardice and it's... divisiveness in yourself. He's like, I hate myself.
Okay, talk about cowardice and divisiveness in yourself. Mm-hmm. And the guy that really gets the hatchet in Dirty, Dirty, Dirty is Hugh Hefner. Oh. Because you talk about divisiveness, you know, and cowardice. I mean, here's a guy who's bi-curious, to say the least. And I mean, Judy, what would you think if I came to the show wearing my slippers and pajamas? I'd say that's the last stop on Straight Street.
I would think you had a sleepover date in the neighborhood, and that's probably
it's a walk of shame.
There is no walk of shame.
Pride
I understood
of
that.
Pride.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I got laid last night. Woo,
Al used
woo.
To say,
Hugh Hefner didn't let my son in the movie night,
and then he wouldn't let Jordan do his magic trick.
The fucked up thing with Hefner is
Hefner sucking John Holmes' cock one time.
Oh my God! Then the vaccine rabies that was floating.
It's the Ivan and Chip Show.
Can you believe we were thinking about trying to get Al to call in? Who needs it?
Al's here.
The thing is, Hefner made Al a national star, right? Because Al was like this big star in New York, and he was winning all these First Amendment cases, and it was kind of a big deal. And Hefner put Al in Playboy with an interview and put him on the national map. But the problem was, it said, Playboy talks to, and it said in parentheses, ugh. Al Goldstein. It was, you know, which is like, you know, Hef's thing.
That?
He invites you to your party and then he insults you.
Yeah.
You know, because Hef's got to be sitting on top of everything. He's a control freak. So, the weird thing about Hefner, too, I always say, he only dates employees. He only dates playmates. Yeah. All these girls are on the fucking payroll.
Yeah.
He can't leave his fucking mansion to, like, meet a girl. At least Al Goldstein, you know, is dating, a film actress, B-movie actress. But he went out with literary agents and lawyers.
I found this lawyer behind the trash cans outside of
But seriously, though, like Larry Flint, you know, with Althea, he put her in a position of great responsibility to Hustler. Bob Guccione, for all his faults, put his wife, Kathy Keaton, in a high position of responsibility and executive job at Penthouse as advertising director, which she did very well at, of course.
Right.
But Hefner, he like fucks these like negative stereotype enforcing bimbozoids and tells me this is the best that gender has to offer. It's bullshit.
Can I interrupt? Actually,
that's very feminine positive. I think.
This ties in actually what's going on here. But
one thing I love about your
book, Mike, is that you bring up Helen Gurley Brown and the whole. Gosh darn it, now I can't even remember. What was her Sex and the Single Girl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know what? that did more for the sexual revolution than a thousand Hefners could.
Well, this is why.
Because
women
because
have
guys
to agree
can't,
to have sex with you.
Right. Guys, you know what? I can have as many Maseratis as Jesus, and it's not going to do anything unless the chicks involved are like, you know, well, okay, you know, I will put out for him before he marries me. You know, and so Helen Gurley Brown deserves praise, and you give it to her.
And absolutely, I do like her message. It's very simple: to be sexy, feel sexy. That's all.
And you also believe that Hefner hates women.
He fucking hates girls. He hates women. Yes, it's fucking palpable. He looks down at them. He does not see them equal as created by God. I mean, it's just crazy the way he views women. And then he wants to take credit for starting the sexual revolution, for winning the sexual revolution. Hey, dude, you don't liberate women by putting bunny tails and rabbit ears on them. It's not how it goes. That's why I'm so down on Hef, because it's just bullshit. It's this duplicity of like, hey, I won the civil rights, you know, war. I liberated women to have sex. And his whole thing, meanwhile, you know, have you seen his TV show?
I mean,
that's very liberating, right? And the fucked up thing is that that business is in such bad shape.
Wait, the old one or the new one?
The current one.
I didn't know he had a new one. The Girls Next Door.
The Girls Next Door.
It's on
Lifetime now.
Lifetime.
The network for women. Because men don't even care.
I don't know.
For women, Judy. It's for women, Judy. Don't you watch that? Is that what you do?
Because it's a lesson for women.
You don't watch Lifetime movies?
Because it is for women,
cheerleaders.
Stranger in My Bed with Joanna Kearns.
Oh. Joanna Capula in You Are Not Mine.
No, all his women look exactly alike. They're all blonde, blue-eyed Aryan princesses.
Fuck
with
dolls.
Giant
There's nothing wrong with
boobs.
The Aryan women. You just have to know how to properly influence the Luftwaffe.
Listen, I asked Leona Helmsley on a date one time.
And her goddamn dogs tried to bite me.
She said no. So I went out with her driver instead. Nice Irish chap.
It was this time that I found myself saying, oh my God, I could eat 17,000 pieces of dim sum right now. So I hired a car to take me down to Chinatown. And I said, you, and you. And I just pointed randomly at people. And I said, you people have more self-respect than the editors who work for me. So you are now my personal advisors. And by the way, do you think these 18 pairs of alligator shoes I bought in Thailand look good next to my flat-screen TV that I will never turn on?
75 pairs of ceramic nose hair trims.
You look puzzled. Do you have a question?
Well, I think a lot of our viewers. We're on TV, right?
I'm blind and I didn't know I was watching. Ivan, why do you like this joint?
I think you guys need to smoke some marijuana
right now.
That's illegal. We are not doing anything like that.
So why would you say in your book that porn for women never works? I've seen porn movies for women, and I agree they don't work because the men are really fucking ugly.
Well,
and they're terrible.
Well, Al Goldstein used to always say to me, the difference between men and women is that women think that around every corner is some guy in a white knight, on a white horse, knight on a white horse, who's coming around the corner to save them, and men think around the next corner is a stewardess who's going to come and blow them.
I don't think that's true.
Jip says that's true. I think it's kind of that's reductive. But Larry Flynt said the same thing. Basically, he said if porn for women worked, I'd be doing it.
Well, maybe they haven't figured out the right formula. Like there was a magazine called Sweet Action.
I remember Sweet Action.
It was for a very slim audience, but I thought that worked.
Well, describe what Sweet Action was.
Yeah, I never
was.
Heard of that one.
I mean, I'm not familiar.
And
with
I'm not slim either.
So. Well, Sweet Action was full of like naked hipster boys. It was pretty good.
Oh, you mean the linguine armed?
Yeah,
I love that.
I think
Sharpie physique.
Everyone recognizes that men are turned on for very easily visually stimulated.
Fake
takes
Amish
a little bit
Vikings.
More.
Yeah, I've told all my friends, in your personal ad, you just need to show like a hint of cleavage. It doesn't matter if you're an A cup. Squish them together, show like an inch of that line, and it's like a homing device.
Not for chicks, though, when I run my personal ad. They don't like the
cleavage.
No,
they don't like
that. I'm a generous 38 double D also.
We like a little tush cleavage.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've got plenty of that. In the front, too, I've got it.
So Mike, next week is our Halloween show with Anna David, but after that you're going to be on tour. Why don't you talk about your tour dates so people can jot them down?
Why, thank you, Judy. Dirty on
there,
tour.
Weedo the dry mouth.
We're going to be at the Word Bookstore in Brooklyn on November 2nd, next Wednesday, or a week from Wednesday. Then we're going to be in Detroit, Chicago. Port Huron, and then we're going to LA, San Francisco, and beyond. All the dates are up at MikeEdison.com, as well as the 3D trailer. And you can get free glasses. Free 3D glasses.
You don't really need them, though, if you're pretty wasted. You can just, you can deal with
if you're
it
sitting in the
glasses.
Studio with the few.
Hey, look, a Jew is giving something away for free. Take
well,
it.
Well, that's yeah. You can sit on a hoppity ball naked.
Oh, wait, before the time's out, though, I'll tell you this much. Mike, you're right. I hate Al Goldstein. But I used to H-A-T capital E. Hate Al Goldstein.
Hate Hey.
Right. Hey, you're right. Like
now
a 14-year-old
only
girl text message.
H-A-T-E italicize Al Goldstein. After reading your book, your book made me not capital
H-A-T-E. I've changed your hatred font?
Yes. Yes, you have. Thank you. Thank you very
all
much.
Caps to lowercase.
But Chip, you always got along great with Al.
I did, because I was just one of the kind of people like he was. I was, sort of brash. Like I said in the book there, a big family, Irish drunks, fighting all the time. I have pretty thick skin. Like I said, we elevated dinnertime torture to an art form, there was never a dry eye in the house.
Al Goldstein is a fucking minefield. I mean, there's no question.
Well, after about 6 years, I stepped on a mine one day, and I don't even remember what it was, but he yelled so loud that my hair blew back, and I was like, that's awesome. It's like a cartoon.
Like an old Maxell tape ad.
Yeah, right? It was.
No, Ice blasted me, we've been friends for years, and I've seen it happen, and I've seen him, like I said, like, just scream at people who are being kind to him, cut off every positive relationship he's ever fucking had in his life.
How dare you be nice to me? That means you have less self-respect than I do for myself. I hate you. I hate me.
And the amazing thing is you don't have to be Jewish to work there, but it helps.
Guilty. You just have to be guilty. That's all.
Just self-loathing.
Self-loathing, right. Guilty. That's all.
Growing up in Brooklyn helps.
All right, but a Screw magazine, the best advertisement for anti-Semitism ever.
So, out of your pornographers that you profiled, I have to guess that Al would be your favorite.
He's the only character in the business, I think. Everybody else is just a business.
Well, the great thing about Al Goldstein is he's honest to a fault, and what you see is what you get. Just Al. There's no bullshit. There's no duplicity. With Hefner, you know, with that guy, you need like a rake and a flashlight.
Sure,
it's right?
All image.
And Bob Guccione, who I think did a lot of great stuff and doesn't get enough credit for, like, truly great photography. It's become a cliche, this gauzy kind of Vaseline in the lens kind of thing, but he invented that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But then again, he's insane too, and, lost billions of dollars trying to build portable nuclear reactors. What the fuck was that? Yeah. Is he Dr. No?
I am going to build
living in a hollowed out
volcano.
Right? And Caligula? Right? Today's money, it was like 40 plus million dollars. He paid for it in cash. Who makes a fucking movie like that?
Nobody.
You're going to your ATM machine and taking out $40 million.
But you know what? He could have made money off of Caligula eventually.
And I like if Larry. I think Larry Flint is a very honest guy, and he's obviously the poster boy.
Did you
just say
you didn't like him?
No, Larry, I like him very much.
Okay.
I like him very much. But like you said, he's a businessman.
And
he said to me straight up, he said, hey, if it were peanut butter, I'd still market it aggressively.
Right.
But I'm selling pussy, and that's the business I'm in.
Yeah.
And he says the smartest thing I ever did was open a casino. He's not sort of like leaning on this legacy. And he was smart enough to see the internet coming, where the other guys, just sort of blamed, Al's got that blame it on everybody else thing. Mm-hmm. Hefner's, I mean, he just... he tried to buy his business back, but it's owned by a hedge fund. I mean, it's really sad. It's a sad fucking story.
Yeah, he was almost done.
Guccione died broke. Al's in a hospital bed. But I love Al.
Broke.
I really, really, really do love Al, and I think he's he's tragic and heroic.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
You agree with
he's
me there?
American
begrudgingly.
Story.
What's going on, McGuire? You haven't said much today.
Well, it's. I really,
What the hell's up with you, you goddamn Irish woman? How come you're not talking about...
I was in awe of our guests.
15 glasses of whiskey yet to have you.
All right, once again, it's been the Mike and Judy Show. Live from Roberta's here.
Go by Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
Dirty, Dirty, Dirty.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.